I'm Mike Katz, Executive Vice President of T-Mobile for Business. And today, I'm joined by Adam and Grace Robbins, co-founders of Reuben's Brews. And here's a really cool fact. Reuben's Brews is actually named after Adam and Grace's first child, Reuben, obviously. And they've got such a great story from going from a home brewing operation to now two tap rooms and a 30-barrel production location. So really exciting story. Really interesting transformation as their business has gone through COVID, like everybody else's business. And I'm so grateful to have you guys here with us today. And first of all, you know, I didn't feel like it was appropriate for us to do this conversation. Like, I had to get myself in the right mood. So of course, I brought this with me. And I figure it's 5 o'clock somewhere. So, you know, even though it's like, you know, noon Pacific, you know, what the heck, I'm talking to you guys.
It's afternoon.
but thanks for being here. So, you know, one of the things that I'd start with is obviously if you're in the, you know, Seattle, Puget Sound area, you're very familiar with Reuben's Brews. But for those that aren't here, it'd be great for you guys to quickly kind of describe your business and then maybe spend a second talking about how your business has changed as the world has changed with COVID. And I'm going to open this person, though. I don't make a loud sound. Okay, there we go.
It's a good sound for the cameras. That's Yeah. So, like we opened in 2012. We brew a lot of different styles. We brew 170 different beers last year. In Washington State, we're the most decorated brewery in the state. We, like Mike said, we started in the garage literally, and then we were getting people emailing us asking us for our beer. So we then opened a small facility, ran out of space there, opened another facility, ran out of space there. Actually, we've got three breweries now, technically. Actually, four breweries, technically, right?
Yeah.
As we've just been like growing as people have asked for more beer. Now we're the sixth biggest craft brewery in the state and one of the top 200 in the country. But it's not just about size, right? It's about quality and it's about balance and it's about keeping true to what you're all about. And that really rings true in a COVID-19 era. You've got to focus on what values you have as a company. So on March 16th in Washington, that was when bars and restaurants were closed down. So overnight we lost, it works out about half of our business we essentially lost overnight, being what we sold into bars and restaurants in terms of kegs, as well as our own tasting rooms. Being from the UK originally, I was keeping an eye on all the developments throughout Europe. And when Italy was going through shutdown, it was like a week before us here. And that really was when we started internally thinking, okay, we need to start planning for something like this happening. So about a week before the shutdown in Washington State, we were already planning contingency plans of what ifs. And overnight we moved our tasting room to a to-go beer store, and we moved onto an online ordering platform as well that we set up. And people have really taken to that a lot. And on top of that, all of the beer that was supposed to go into kegs and draft ended up going into cans. So we have a canning line that we deliberately made flexible to be able to can small batches of everything. So we had to pivot pretty quickly, like literally overnight. Doesn't get much quicker than that, right? But we were planning in advance.
So as you kind of went to the, and you know, your industry, you know, restaurants, bars, obviously has been really impacted by what's gone on with COVID and all the shutdown orders and everything else. And so I think a lot of companies that are in your industry have had to wrestle with the same transition, going from a, you know, a physical environment where people are in your establishment to a virtual one. How did that change go for you guys? I know you had to do it quickly, but like, how did you evaluate your options? How did you pick technology? What were some of the harder decisions and implementations that you had to do?
Well, we definitely had to change, as we said, pretty much overnight. And we wanted to make sure that the changes we were making were going to be sustainable for the long term. So that's how we really prioritized which ones we were going to take into effect, and then others that maybe would not have as a top priority to implement, right, as the whole world was changing around us.
Yeah, so the first thing is to keep the team safe. That's the first priority.
Absolutely.
And once that was, we had we came up there, we came up with a proposal to the team, and then they sat down and gave us input of how to actually work the to-go store. And they came up with a really good way of doing it where customers don't actually come inside physical space. We moved to an online system, ordering system as well. And over about 60% of orders through the to-go store are online, of which half of them are actually on mobile devices, which is kind of an interesting statistic. So as we move to more of a virtual world, we're seeing it even in people ordering beer, which is kind of an interesting thing. I think the key thing is around connection, right? Human connection. So beer is around, it's a very sociable beverage, right? And we've lost that like fundamentally from this. So we've done a lot more like social media, which is kind of an obvious thing to do. We also have a podcast, Ruben's Sightglass, that I've been spending a lot more time doing, including following other breweries throughout the country and what they're doing around COVID-19. And we're all all learning from each other's what we've done and what we shouldn't have done, you know. In terms of technology, this is an opportunity, right? We've been given a kind of strange opportunity to be able to sit back and look at things in a different way. So like our whole ERP system was getting pretty annoying and taking a lot of time and a lot of manual work around. We're even gonna have to hire somebody else to be running the ERP system we use. So there are some other options. So we've been going through a process of checking in on other options, and we're actually gonna change our ERP system that we wouldn't probably have even thought about doing in the normal day-to-day bustle, you know, and hustle. Yeah, can you think of anything else?
In terms of technology? No, I mean, we talked about how reliant we are on technology anyways. Like many of our team are working solely on tablets that are connected to the cell network instead of having laptops with them. So, you know, certainly being able to have more flexibility in terms of the devices you're using has been helpful.
Yeah, it's kind of an opportunity to see, to make sure, when a shock like this hits, you have to be more efficient, right? And whether that's through your ERP system, or we have a CRM system, which we run through tablets, obviously powered by T-Mobile. So when our team goes into customers, they can log and monitor like people's, what they want, what they ordered, and whether it came through. So it's like, we've been just trying to not leave any stone unturned to some extent, using this as a pause and an opportunity to look at things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like you guys were pretty technology forward before this happened, which I'm sure helped as you had to rapidly adapt and evolve. But for businesses, you know, particularly other restaurants or bars that are in a similar situation, but maybe weren't as technology forward as you guys were, like what are some like key pieces of advice you'd give them as they're considering on how they change into this more virtual world? Like, you know, are there some, you know, good lessons learned, some things to stay away from that you guys would advise on?
I think word of mouth marketing is an exponential growth curve, right? So we saw it when we first opened, because we were getting great press, we were getting awards for our beers back in 2012, but we weren't very busy in the tasting room. And then all of a sudden we hit this like a certain gravity or velocity, and all of a sudden we got totally ran out of beer. Like it was like almost within a week after 6 months, it just kind of like hit. And I think that's the same for now, right? So when we're talking about the long term, we want to be doing things that maybe aren't optimal in the current status, but in the long term are the right thing to do. So by that, I mean, keep your store open in some respect. So customers know that you're still open. You can't flip a switch and turn, like close everything and then turn it on and expect people to know immediately. So we made sure that we were open to some extent throughout the whole of this. One of the most important things for us is to keep the team together. So whereas we may be able to reduce our labor costs at this time, it's very important for us, far more important for us to keep the team together, have that circle of safety that we're all together in this, we're all fighting for the same thing. And you know, I think it's like Grace said, it's about the long term and just taking a long term approach.
And we're definitely realizing that changing people's behavior is hard, right? So as Adam was saying, if you kind of stop momentarily, it's hard to pick back up once you lose that momentum. So we've done some things like we had a customer survey recently because we see phase two coming. We're not exactly sure when, but we will be able to open our tasting room in some way, shape, or form in the near future. So we want to hit the ground running with that. So we sent out a customer survey to gather feedback about what people are concerned about when they do find that they're able to go back into their tasting room or their restaurant or bar and be able to address those concerns from the very get-go so that we're hitting the ground running and we're not stopping and pausing and thinking and reworking, but we can just go. Because I think once you lose that momentum, it's very hard to pick it back up again.
What was interesting to me was even the fact we asked customers, what did they want? That became news. That was on like the local TV station, like, and on the news show there. It's like, we got 1,500 respondents of people who had basically all been to our tasting room. And what
captive audience, right? Yeah. Everybody's home. Not do a survey?
Yeah. But we didn't think about that when we sent it out, right?
Yeah. Speaking of your customers, you mentioned social a second ago, but one thing that I'd be really interested to hear from you all is how you've been able to stay connected with your customers, because you know, in your tasting rooms and through your restaurants that you work with, you've built this great community around your brand. So how have you been able to stay connected with those customers? But also, how have you been able to go and find new customers? Because, you know, many of the customers that you've worked with aren't open. And so I'm sure it's been really important for you guys to keep your business continuity to go and find additional customers. So be interested to hear what are some of the tactics that you've deployed in those two areas?
Yeah, so we don't think in terms of customer acquisition and customer retention. We think more in terms of we're built on four pillars and we need to adhere to those pillars. So one of those is around like balance of beers, and that around making sure that they're top quality and around the award sort of level. Like they need to be some of the best around, and they're not going to meet that requirement, then they get made into hand sanitizer nowadays, actually. So we're working with a local distillery to make a little bit of hand sanitizer out of some of our failed experiments. And we've been experimenting more, right? Because breadth is one of those pillars for us as well. And we've already released 90 beers this year, which is kind of crazy to think that we're in May and we've released 90 different beers. But that's a big part of who we are. So for us to give back to customers is about being true to who we are and still not stopping what we've been doing, right? Another one is a big educational component of what we do. And we've been primarily leaning into that through the podcast. But we're working on ways of moving our in-person educational seminars to more of a virtual world. And that's gonna be able to take a little bit of work. We're working on that as well. And you know, we're doing a 4 p.m. beer break. You know, so on Instagram, we'll at 4 p.m. I'll talk about a certain beer and bore everybody, but some people seem to like it, so, so that's okay.
Who wouldn't like that? Come on. I thought today was the 12 p.m. beer break. So sorry, I get my wires got crossed on that one. Speaking of the 90 different beers that you guys have done this year, one of the beers that you've done is the You Are Not Alone brew, which I'd love for you to talk about, because not only is it a unique beer that you've produced, but you're donating 100% of the profits for that brew to the Big Table, which supports the hospitality industry. So I'd love for you to talk more about that, specifically how you made the decision to do that, because look, the times are hard right now. And I love that you guys how you put a priority on employees and making sure you kept your teams intact. But that's a hard decision to take profits and push them into something that helps your overall industry. So how did you guys come to that decision?
Well, as Adam said, we're not changing who we are or what we're doing. We're sticking very true to our values. And we have a really amazing community that we're a part of. And we always have wanted to give back to that community through other charitable programs. So the You Are Not Alone was we really saw that there's a need at this particular moment to help our friends and our customers and people we know and love and work with in the industry when they're going through the hardship right now. So this is really unprecedented times. So I mean, we just knew it was just aligned with what we would do anyways. So we said we can do this with this one beer. Notice we're not doing it for all beers all the time, but for this one batch of beer, we were able to donate 100% of the profits. And through Adam's connections with other, you know, his friends in the brewing industry, able to get other breweries on board. And he even scaled a recipe for a homebrew recipe. So going back to his homebrewing roots. And how many homebrewers brewed that beer?
Two dozen, I know of.
Two dozen homebrewers making the same beer and donating in whatever way they're able to an organization in need. So again, it's not that we're changing what we're doing. We were staying true to what we've always done. You know, we have a speaking of connecting to customers as well, we have a Thank You Thursday program that we've been running for years since 2013. And we partner with a different organization, nonprofit organization each week. And we would donate $1 a pint to that organization on each Thursday of every week. So we've donated actually $175,000 to various nonprofit organizations in our community throughout the years. And this, it's just kind of core to who we are. I started my career as a Peace Corps volunteer. I'm the bleeding heart, but it's just really core to who we are. So the You Are Not Alone was really just an extension of that, what we try to do all the time, which is support the community that supports us.
And just going to add a little bit, I've grown up in the UK, you often think things are half empty, but now I've lived here for 15 years, it's half full, right? So by losing half of our sales, we're actually got half of our sales. So it's like a positive thing that we can build from. And others haven't been as fortunate as that. So it was important for us to recognize that. And the ability for us to do it, that the way that we can do it, is because we don't have any focus on any expectation setting around like annual profits or anything. So we don't have any significant investors that we have promised and certain returns to and that have expectations. So when this hits and our profits are going to be this year like a percentage of what we thought they were going to be, that doesn't matter, right? It's about getting through it. The goal of every entity is to survive, and at no point is that more obvious and in your face than today, right? So, and it's not just us to survive. It's very easy to get insular in difficult times and think about yourself and what you need. I think once you get through the change curve, you realize it's far more important to think about other people, whether it's through You Are Not Alone, our customers and people in the industry, and everybody, our team. But I'm trying to think about it all the time as how other people are being impacted, because it's very easy to take an insular approach. And that's not what we want to be.
Yeah, guys, that's incredible. Thank you for that, for being a member of this community. I can't tell you how much I thank you for your selflessness on that. How is You Are Not Alone done?
It sold very quickly.
And then we brewed another batch.
Yeah. But we were able to donate $28,000 from that beer. To Big Table, which is the organization that the city of Seattle was steering people to help support the restaurant workers who have lost their jobs at this time. So,
yeah, that's amazing. And there's not a industry or group of people or businesses that need that more. So amazing, just amazing.
It's been nice. It was a very quick turnaround. Like normally getting labels designed and then approved, every label has to be approved by the federal government. That whole process normally takes like 3 months, and we squeezed it into almost 3 weeks, I think. So it was kind of exponentially, sped up. But like for us now, it's like, okay, we're thinking about programs for first responders now. What can we do to help first responders? And what can we do to get our Thank You Thursday program going again, like Grace said, right? The shock has hit, and now it's going to be with us for up to 2 years, right? So now how do we really realign and set ourselves for the long term?
So speaking of that long term, as you look forward, and we hopefully, in Washington move into phase 2 and 3 and 4 and beyond, you know, the worst of COVID. How has what you've learned over the last, you know, days and weeks, you know, changed your business forever going forward? Like what things have you taken out of this that are now going to be a core part of what you guys do?
The first thing that is a pretty obvious one is that online store. When we sent out that survey, 85% of respondents said that they would use that in the future. So don't get rid of it. Which is kind of interesting because only 75% of people said they've actually used it so far. So more people want to use it in the future than have used it already. So that's kind of an interesting sort of bit of insight. So that and the ease of people coming in and coming out and getting beer quickly is one thing that we'll totally keep. I think this whole thing about, we talk about the virtual world and the new reality. I think that's, I see shocks like this as an accelerant rather than a creator of trends. And so on that trend, there's been one trend around consuming at home, like whether it's to-go food, now it's to-go beer, right? So we've accelerated that a little bit. So that's going to be around for some time. But the ability to connect with customers in more of a virtual way, I think this shock has made us realize that we need to be focused on that a lot more. I'm trying to remember, one of my friends yesterday made a good analogy about it around to-go sales in his restaurant, always like the, I don't know, it was like the thing that they never worried about and they just put aside. But now it's like the thing that's keeping them open, like literally. So I think it just changes your emphasis.
Anything else? I
think, you know, for us, when we're talking about those pillars, I think we've got to just stick to those and keep focused on breadth. And we have one philosophy, which is glass backwards. So our can backwards in our case today, right? So we focus on what we want this to taste like, and then everything else we're gonna make work. So whereas most breweries or most production, most capitalist production sort of facilities, think the other way around. They think about efficiencies and what they have actually in their warehouses. So like whether it's the same yeast strain, same base malt, same base ingredients, and just tweaking it from there. We, like with Hazelicious, we brought in a new yeast strain specifically for that beer. We literally go and select hops for specific beers, like Crikey that you're drinking there. Like that has a blend of hops that we specifically go to the farms to select on. So cheers. and so, like, I think you've got to keep true to your core, but recognize the new environment you're in and how can you adjust from that.
And I think we were all kind of on this change curve, you know, where initially it felt like, oh, well, this event isn't going to be the same as it was. Like thinking about a brewer's night, for example, like it's not the same if you can't be there in person talking with the customers who are drinking the beer. However, it's not the same, but it can be better in other ways, right? So in terms of being able to interact with more people through a platform such as this and connect in a more meaningful way versus maybe talking with four or five people who are vocal and want to come and talk with you during a brewer's night, you might actually reach more people. So, you know, while things are different and change is always hard, I think there, if you are able to see opportunities where they exist and make long-term changes for the better, you will come out of this stronger.
Yeah. Well, guys, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to do this, but more so thank you for all the good that you're doing. You know, I just love hearing about, one, the way that you've prioritized your employees, and secondly, the selfless acts that you've made in, you know, brewing beer, giving away the profits, and helping this entire community that you're a part of. And one of the things that you've reinforced again to me here is that doing good and having good business results are not mutually exclusive. I mean, it's one of the common threads that I've seen in all these conversations that I've had the privilege of being a part of. So I want to thank you guys so much for doing this. I want to encourage everybody to please support your small businesses. If you love beer, go visit one of the tap houses once they're open again for Rubens Brews. Order it online if you love beer. But please, you know, if you're not a beer lover, please be a lover of small businesses and take time to support our local small businesses who are the lifeblood and backbone of our communities. Adam and Grace, thank you so much again. I really, really appreciate it. And good luck to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.